What is going on, you guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Avalanche Warning. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us after our Super Show episode that we released just a couple days ago. Really appreciate it. Hope you guys liked our, you know, central previews, things of that sort. There was a lot to be said, and we gave ourselves a lot of time to say it. But we're keeping this one a little shorter today. A little bit to cover with the preseason games that happened over this past weekend as of recording on Thursday, September 25th. But some good things happened in those preseason games. The Avalanche took a full sweep on the doubleheader, and we're going to talk about it. I am Bailey Curtis. I've got Grant Foster and Gavin Osagera here with me today. And guys, we're going to do a quick vibe check before we go into discussing some of the more specifics. Are we feeling, I know preseason's kind of hit or miss with some fans, but we feeling good, feeling bad, thumb in the middle? Where are we at?
I mean, after the teams played in both preseason games, I feel good about it. I feel good that we're not a team that's had a disastrous injury happen in those games either, unlike the Florida Panthers with Barnikov or Logan Cooley in that same game, which sucks to see happen. So it's, I think we got out without being injured, knock on wood. And I think that everyone really showed up.
Yeah. It is really unfortunate, and I do want to kind of mention some of the injuries that happened. That's unfortunate for Florida. Per reports, Barnikov, I'm so used to talking about him today. Good grief. It looks like Alexander Barnikov may be out for a little bit. Sounds like he had an evaluation today, but per report sounds like it could have something to do with his ACL, which if that is the case, that's potentially the season for Barnikov.
Oh,
and that's not the way I imagine the reigning two-time Stanley Cup champions expected to start their third season vying for a three-peat. But yeah, not good at all. Any kind of thoughts there?
I mean, you know, as my brother Reed likes to say, that he's the number one player in the NHL, even though he's wrong. The thing is that Florida actually has a mini Barnikov and Anton Lundell. If Anton Lundell is like a very, very, very good center, but not a lot, like two-way center that not a lot of people really talk about as much because you have Barnikov there. But man, if Lundell can even be like half the player that Barnikov is, I think they're going to be fine. Plus they get all that cap off the books. They could bring in, you know, really anybody they want, except, you know, since Barkov's going to be out for the playoffs, if he does have some really bad ACL tear, they don't even have to worry about the injury cap or the salary cap with injured players coming back. So,
yeah, you know. That's...
I didn't know that Logan Cooley got injured, though. I missed that memo.
Yeah, he got injured in the Ball Arena game, I think.
Yeah, it was Barnikov.
Oh, Barnikov. I thought it was
Barnikov. Yeah, Barnikov threw a hit. I'm pretty sure that's the same play. Yeah, the same play. I was not in that game, unfortunately.
He accidentally boarded Cooley because he was going in for the hit, and then last second Cooley turned and showed him the numbers, unfortunately, and it just turned out badly. But yeah, it sucks to see happen to the guy. And then luckily, over at DU, the Avs avoided disaster for once with injury, and Cale Makar did not get concussed by a flying elbow by someone whose name none of us will remember because he's a seventh round pick. I looked it up, by the way, just to shit talk better.
Well, the one before that was Jeff Carter with the Penguins.
Yeah, and then it wasn't intentional by the guy at all, but it was still like bad moment. Makar went down pretty hard, and then unfortunately for him, Landeskog was also in the building and did not let that fly. I didn't realize at first, like, he fed him uppercuts. He fed him quite to the point where after Landeskog skated away, that guy was on the ground for quite a bit.
I you know, Landeskog, I think that's why people say that Landeskog is the best. I mean, he's the last kind of that breed of center where you see a guy go down on your team and he'll drop the gloves with anybody, maybe other than maybe Matt Rempe, because that guy might actually, you know, hurt him. Mm-hmm. And Gabe, please stay healthy for the love of God. I think that's the biggest problem with the Avalanche, at least from last year that I noticed was like, man, the hunger to like dominate teams and to like really send a message about you're not going to mess with our team kind of really got lost last mm-hmm. year. I think, you know, Ross Colton yeah. saying it, everybody saying it, like the captain being back is a difference maker. I think it is a difference maker because obviously Landeskog owns the room in terms of being the voice there and being, you know, the guy to kind of get everybody ready. I think it also just like helps because like McKinnon's kind of a guy where, you know, you can't really no one wants him to fight out of fear of injury because one of the last times he fought, he hurt his thumb, and that was right before the 2022 playoffs. And everybody was like, hey, dude, don't fight ever again, you know? And then you had Manson injured for a while where he couldn't fight because he broke his wrist. And there's been no one really to send the message of like, you're not going to mess with our teams. That's why some people, very few, like Jamie Benn, because he's one of those captains where he is going to drop the gloves with you and he will fight you if he sees that you're messing with one of his players.
I think you mentioned Ross Colton, and I really, it sends a message when you have one guy talking about how it doesn't matter who it is on the ice, you got to stand up for him. And then Landeskog goes and says it a couple days later, because that Ross Colton clip came from, I believe, a Gorilla Sports segment that he did with Jesse and Megan. And then again, Landeskog comes back and says it during the preseason game on Sunday. I think that's something that's being seen around the locker room, is that not only is you know, that the precedent and the standard that they want to set, but again, it is something that has been missing, I think, or at least hasn't been on the same level for the last 3 years with Landeskog being missing from the ice. Now he's back and you've got that stand-up guy back. And I think that speaks volumes for what the message that the Avalanche are trying to go into this season with. Is it doesn't matter if you're messing with McKinnon on the first line or Barkov on the fourth line, if that's who ends up taking that 4C spot, it doesn't matter. You head at one of our guys, and this is the message that's being sent here.
Oh, definitely. So, and yeah. Even with his just general presence, I think around the team, I think it's going to do wonders for Makar and McKinnon to not have to be the main leaders, and they can just kind of focus on their game. Obviously they are leaders, they're alternate captains, but it's not that the fact that they have to be like the heads of the locker room. They can kind of just play their game mm-hmm. and not have to be the main guy, especially for guys like Nelson, who coming from New York have to be like, always had to be the veteran guy in the locker room. Now he just gets to sit around and be like, yeah, that's not my problem. I can just play my game, not have to welcome like kids into the room. Like I can just hang out in my stall and not have to deal with that.
But, which I think there's something to be said, too, about Nelson not having to do that and still choosing to. Because I do think with him taking on that 2C role, there is a lot of veteran presence to be rolled around the locker room with a guy like that.
Oh, for
especially
sure.
Especially yeah. with Jack Jury and Barkov kind of potentially feeding off of, you know, okay, what makes you such a successful 2C and how can I translate that to my game?
Yeah, and I really just like the energy around the team for the most part. It seems like everyone's really helping each other out mm-hmm. And have a lot of good camaraderie with each other, especially like Parker Kelly and Barkov seem to really be getting along very well.
Yeah.
Like they asked.
Situation, like, maybe he doesn't speak great English, yeah, but he understands it well.
That's a lie. I think he does that, so he doesn't have to talk to reporters. He's like, I don't. No habla inglés, and then he comes in after, and he's like fluent English. It's like, yeah, all right, buddy.
No habla inglés.
But no, he's I like him a lot. I mean, they asked Kelly about him before, and he's like, yeah, that guy's got it. So, and it's encouraging to see just how much the staff is also investing in Barnikov. Like, everybody's surprised we learned how to develop a player, like actually put confidence in him and pay attention, tell him what you want, like believe in a player, and you might develop something out of him. We cracked the code.
You know, this is something I was talking with Rudo and AJ about today, is that Barnikov kind of came.
Were you on the DNVR podcast today? Were you on the DNVR podcast?
Thank you so much.
No, sorry, I didn't know this.
Sorry, yeah. Everyone, there's royalty among us.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay.
Sorry, I didn't know that we were kissing at the feet here.
Hold your tongues.
Oh God. No, but we were talking about how, you know, Barnikov kind of came out of nowhere when it comes to, you know, like looking at the roster heading into the season and potential holes that needed to be filled. In my mind, it was going to be Kelly taking that 4C spot if Jack Drury, because McFarland had kind of made the assumption or alluded to the fact that they feel like they can get more out of Jack Drury, which, okay, cool, great. And then later in that press conference, Barnikov's name comes up, and I'm like, I know he had a great season in the KHL, but this, it's kind of coming out of left field. Because I had other prospects higher on my list, not knowing that Barnikov was somebody that they were considering. It makes sense, again, after the great season that he had in the KHL last year. But I think it's just very interesting to me that name really came. It's spoken once, and all of a sudden, it's one of the four names that everybody is talking about to take that spot, which I think, again, it's very interesting.
I mean, you got to give him credit, though. I mean, for people who follow this team a lot, like the three of us, and not knowing much about him, to make the splash that he has is pretty impressive. I will say, though, this should be motivating to, other guys in the group, like Ivan or Ty Fellhaber or other guy, or Preshapov.
Preshapov was the other one, yeah.
You really want to go there. These guys should be looking at, you know, You learn quickly that your spot is not guaranteed. You don't get unlimited shots at this thing. You know, Toronto Maple Leafs fans have realized that pretty well, that you don't get infinite opportunities at something, and you have to take advantage of it when you have it. And so far, he has. Will he keep that up? That remains to be seen. But I think he's impressed everybody, especially coming from the KHL.
And when we talk about that kind of go-go mentality for protecting players and bringing in a little bit of grit and physicality to the lineup, you're getting that out of a guy like Barnikov. You're getting a guy who's not afraid to throw the body, which I think is something that can be very, very useful in the bottom six. It certainly doesn't hurt, at least, in the way that I think about it.
And then I think so too, and I really like the current group of kids they got. I mean, Gushkin is just a fun, like, AHL guy. You swapped out bust of a pick, Oscar Olsson, not even a functional AHL player, for at least a functional AHL player. And then Gavin Brindley just showing up again, also in that DU game. He was great.
Let's talk about that, actually. I want to kind of get into the doubleheader that you guys are on it with these transitions the last couple episodes. Thank you for that.
I know. We're great. I know. We're locked in. We're dialed, bro. Are you dialed? I'm dialed. Gavin's dialed. Bailey, are you dialed?
We're not using We're So Back, we're getting rid of dialed.
Bailey's so notch, bro. She's so notch. Yes.
I can't. With you guys, good grief. Anyway, so doubleheader happened this past Sunday, as of again recording on Thursday. Avalanche with a clean sweep on the weekend, Magnus Arena in dominating fashion, Brindley with two goals, Tristan Nielsen with two goals, Gushchen with a heck of a shot as well. I think there's something to be said there in his talent, but yeah, Brindley was most definitely the standout I think, for me, coming in, being able to play on a line with Gabriel Landeskog on that top line. Tristan Nielsen is another kind of standout for me, too. He was kind of a sneaky little standout for me, though. Like, he's somebody I kind of watched him during warmups, watched him during the first period, and the way that he goes about handling the puck and skating through the zone, his positioning, all really impressed me. I was not expecting to be that taken aback by a guy like Tristan Nielsen, who kind of, again, came out of, he was picked up by the Avalanche this offseason, signed to an AHL deal, had a really good season with the Abbotsford Canucks. He's somebody who is not used to the Colorado Eagles system, but familiar with it, having played against them in the playoffs for the Calder Cup. And yeah, again, just came out of nowhere. It was a soft first period, but that second and third period really ramped things up in that game. And I think groups had their chance to stand out. You get that fight from Landeskog. Unfortunate with Cale Makar exiting the game early, ends up being fine. Avs dodged a major bullet with that one. But Gavin, just your overall kind of thoughts on that first DU game.
I thought it was pretty sick, honestly, seeing Sean Behrens go back to Magnus Arena. Kind of a more of a quiet game from him. I didn't really notice a lot of what he was doing, especially playing next to a guy like Cale Makar, who did have a good night. Two assists. I think he had three, but they might have taken one away from him. And then, you know, Nichushkin, quiet night, didn't do much. Somehow still picked up three assists.
Good job. I was not overall impressed with Nichushkin. He could not hold on to a puck to save his life.
I just don't think it's preseason. I think for a guy like that, that's where it comes. But when you get into like the guy scratching for a roster spot, that's when you really see who's trying. And Landeskog, of course, because he's just happened to be playing.
Right.
He was looking great all night, flying around, raining punches down on kids, and overall just looking great.
That kid's going to remember that for the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's probably, he's going to tell his children about it. He's going to be like, oh my God. Yeah.
I got beat up by Gabe Landeskog. It was sick. The best moment of my life.
Yeah. Brindley was great. Showed like he's a great offensive player. Definitely want to see him like marinate, especially his offensive skills in the AHL, just to get it like quicker. Cause like in the NHL, if he really wants to make it into a middle six role, his defense is always going to suffer because he's 5'9". He has a great stick. Like, he's good defensively, but if he really wants to stay in the NHL, he needs to be able to have good offense, like be a good 30, 35 point guy. And that's probably the best way he can do it in the NHL, or the NHL is playing in the AHL for a while. And then Nielsen, I honestly don't know who that is, but I saw he had two goals and I was like, wow. And I saw the highlights and I was pretty impressed by him.
Yeah.
So overall, that first game was pretty fun. He dominated Utah in fairly impressive fashion. I know we were talking about him earlier, but TJ Ginla did play in this game, Jerome Ginla's son. Kind of a bum. Didn't do much. Hasn't really impressed, in, from what I understand, in any capacity, like rookie tournament, preseason. Like, he's kind of been of a ghost all year, so I really hope he picks it up. Just from a pure fan standpoint. But yeah, I'll throw it over to you guys.
Grant,
I mean, Nichushkin, you know, Bailey, the train does not start on fire. You know, you got to warm up the coals. You got to get some heat in there. You got to get some flames bursting. You know, he's like a train from the 1900s. You know, he's just, he's slowly getting there. He's not one of these bullet trains. He's not an electric train or anything like that where he's, you know, a million miles an hour out of the gate. He's got to get some time in, get his feet wet. He's got to do a little bit of stuff on the side. That way, you know, he's getting some extras, you know. Just kidding.
Oh, God.
He's not doing that.
Speaking of an actual bullet train, game two, Martin Neches.
But, you know, honestly, thank you, Avalanche, and anybody for not, like, like being able to watch the game at home at all and relying on Twitter highlights. I still can't find any. Still trying to look for him. Still trying to see what happened. The only one I've seen is Gavin Brindley's first goal. That's the only thing I've seen. But, you know.
I've seen Netches's rolling around.
Oh, yeah.
But I think
you know is he was torching kids all night. He was just getting frequent breakaways. Yeah. That's all he was doing all night long.
I was going to say, Netches, I believe, I'd consider the standout for that 3-2 win at Ball Arena.
He looks like a 90-point player playing with AHL kids. That's kind of
I think it's really great. Also really good. I think it's really great that, you know, like the young guys are kind of getting their feet wet because they're probably going to have to be called up to play fourth line minutes. But I mean, if anything in the NHL has taught us something, it's like when it's not all that important of a game, like, you know, you're the Dallas Stars and you're starting Jason Robertson in the second last game of the season. And, you know, oh, hey, he got injured because, you know, hockey is a pretty physical and brutal sport. Thank you for not playing McKinnon and Makar. How about you just, like, you know, if you see the puck go in the corner, just think about it twice. You know,
think we need twice.
We need you know, you're not only going to be required to play as many games as humanly possible in the NHL season, but you're also going to be going to the Olympics. So, like, you know, love you. Just, like, you know, take the preseason games a little bit easy. We don't need to be dangling around AHLers. We already know you can embarrass probably almost everybody in the league on the blue line.
If you see a puck in the corner, Kale, don't.
Yeah. And if you know, and if you see, especially if that player in the corner is an AHLer whose entire goal is to be physical in a preseason game just so that he can prove to his coaches that, you know, he wants that he's going to play, just think twice. Think twice.
That's why I don't like preseason. It's a lot of stars kind of given half effort at best against people that literally want to make a living. And are going to be trying their best to be as physical and disruptive as possible. I think obviously you got to get McKinnon into a preseason game. I'm glad they're shortening the preseason overall. Mm-hmm. Starting what next year, I think, is when they're doing it.
Yeah.
No one likes the preseason. It's especially when it goes on too long. Like, you always see the first two games, everyone's like, look at these highlights. Best goal of the NHL season. And it's a preseason game highlight. It's like, all right, chill out.
What I will say is kind of interesting for me is looking at the Avs preseason schedule specifically. I haven't gone through other teams' preseason schedules, so I don't know if anybody else is dealing with this. They had a week, almost an entire week, between their doubleheader and the upcoming preseason game on Saturday against the Dallas Stars. That, to me, is just it's so strange. Why I understand why they want to start that early. Why not give them something in between? Because the way that Bednar looks at this too is he's made three cuts to his roster, two of which were to send injured players back to their junior teams to continue rehabilitation.
I think you're trying to find reason and understanding and competent, like, decision making from a place where you'll get none. This is
I'm aware.
Preseason.
I'm very aware.
After all. No. So no.
Preseason.
You're screaming into the void on this one.
Yeah. Preseason to me is a good opportunity for AHL personnel. Yeah. To start kind of rounding out their roster. It's time to start kind of hammering home power plays. If there's things that need working on or changed personnel, things of that sort. But for me, it really the biggest storylines coming out of training camp and preseason is so these AHL squads can be narrowed down. Especially important in a situation like in an organization like Colorado, where there's been so much personnel turnover in a single offseason. That's one of the single most important storylines to come out of this offseason. The other one, it literally dog days. You get Brent Burns, you get Victor Olofsson. Okay, cool, we're done. I don't know. I am happy to see preseason being shortened, but in the meantime, the Avalanche do have four more games coming up until leading into opening night, which is against the LA Kings in LA on October 7th. But until then, you've got Dallas this upcoming Saturday. You've got Vegas on Tuesday. Both of those are at home. Then you immediately hop on a plane to get to Vegas for a game on Wednesday. And then you'll head over to Dallas to play an away game on October 4th. Then you come home, prep for the upcoming start of the regular season. I don't expect much of an NHL squad to come out of any of these games. If it is, you maybe see a more NHL heavy squad in one game, maybe two. I don't see it for more than one though.
I think we send a message here to the boys in Dallas, and we just go, hey bud, you know, put out your AHLers. We're gonna absolutely thump you with some NHLers. We're gonna show you how we do it in the preseason. Forget the postseason there, bud.
Okay, no. Jersey.
But there's actually a couple. There's probably three people I want to see play in the rest of these preseason games. That's like a part of the big guns, and like, you know, Adam McCarr, Taves, Landeskog, McKinnon, Natchez. There's only three people I want to see left. I want to see McKinnon, Nichushkin, and Brent Burns. That's all I want to see out of the rest of these preseason games. Have Brent Burns, especially maybe Brent Burns a little more than others, so that he can kind of get the feeling of how the Avalanche play, even if he plays with AHLers. You know, he's just going to have to deal with that. But yeah, just get him a little bit accustomed to it, so that like in the first game of the season, we're not rolling in and like, you know, Brent Burns is used to, you know, throwing the puck around the boards like he's a Carolina Hurricane, and, you know, throwing the puck around the boards, just chasing after it, kind of going into the corners, never really any offensive production. It's just, hey, throw the puck there, throw the puck there, throw the puck there, throw the puck there, and, you know, somehow we'll get it to the net. But, yeah, I think Brent Burns should play the most, and I don't think anybody else should come close.
I agree to a point, because there is still something to be said. Yes, he returned to practice on Tuesday with the NHL squad, but we, according to Bednar, both him and McCarr seem fine after their respective tweaks, injuries. But I wonder if the decision comes to not play him in the game on Saturday and they wait until a Tuesday or a Wednesday to finally give him some time, just to make sure they're not pushing the envelope on anything injury wise. Cause not only are you talking about a guy who can eat minutes on the blue line, you're talking about a guy who owns the current Ironman streak in the NHL. And I don't think they want to chance anything happening to that.
Well, I don't know if you can really eat minutes, because minutes isn't really like, you know, it's not something.
Okay, thank you, Captain Obvious. It's
something more so that, you know, you kind of like.
Actually, in case you didn't know.
What?
They're quite animal.
Well, according to my calculations, Gavin, you can't actually eat minutes. So how much you? No, I'm just playing.
All right, Mr. Peabody, let's roll on this conversation, please.
Let's see, we got.
So Brent Burns, I could see him playing in Saturday's game if he is fully healthy. I also would not be surprised if this is something the Avalanche weighed on and Bednar's like, let's not push this for injury. So that's my two cents on the Brent Burns talk. Because I will say, in getting him in some games, there are some situations I'd like to see him tested out in, just again to see how he fares underneath an Avalanche coach system, and kind of testing him out in some of those special teams formations and things of that sort. But otherwise, I personally can't find any good reason, if he is still kind of feeling some sort of injury, why I would chance anything happening before the regular season starts.
Well, because he's gotta get used. He's gotta get used to playing. I think though that he has to get used to playing an actually offensive style of play. You know, not everything can be shots from the point. You know, that's not how the Avalanche work.
Your season, your shot. The NFL season is rolling, and every touchdown can bring you closer to a payout with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. From first touchdown scorer to anytime touchdown props or the thrill of live in-game betting, every snap is loaded with opportunity. Now the Broncos had an unfortunate week three. However, you can turn around your fortune by betting on their week four matchup with the Cincinnati Bengals. Right now, the Broncos are heavily favored at -425, and the Bengals are underdogs at +330, with the over-under set at 44.5. You could also bet any touchdown scorer like J.K. Dobbins, Cortland Sutton, Jamar Chase. New customers, this one is for you. Bet just $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, score over $200 off NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code THPN. That's code THPN to get $200 in bonus bets instantly when you place your first $5 bet. Plus, over $200 off NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. In partnership with DraftKings, the crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus age and eligibility varies by jurisdiction. Fees may apply in Illinois, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 7 days after issuance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/promos. NFL Sunday Ticket offer for new subscribers only and auto renews until canceled. Digital games and commercial use excluded. Restrictions apply. Additional NFL Sunday Ticket terms at youtube.com/go/NFL Sunday Ticket/terms. Limited time offer.
Fair. No, and that's why I'm saying, like, I don't see him playing in Saturday's game, but I could see him playing in one of the last two, yeah, if not both.
But I think, he just needs to kind of get his feet wet with everything, kind of be more accustomed, and, you know, just like Gavin Brindley needs to get more accustomed to maybe playing a little bit more in the NHL. You know, we're talking about two different ends of the spectrum here. Brent Burns being, you know, a mainstay in the NHL for a while, but Gavin Brindley being an AHL guy making his way into the NHL and being a prospect. But I think, you know, both of them are kind of the ones that everyone's waiting to see the most out of, because you don't really know what you're fully getting with either of them. But Gavin Brindley, he making some pretty big moves. Some may be saying he's making some money moves.
Is he? Is that the route we're going with this transition? Oh, good grief.
You like that segue.
So we talked a little bit about Brindley's contributions in the first game of the doubleheader on Sunday at Magnus Arena, scored the first two goals for Colorado, and because of that, earned himself a spot in the NHL group for practice on Tuesday. For those of you unaware, most of training camp was conducted with two groups being a mix of both NHLers and or expected NHLers and expected AHLers. They officially kind of narrowed each of those groups into their respective NHL and AHL groups on Tuesday. They did not practice on Monday, more of a break for them. But on Tuesday, we saw Gavin Brindley as the extra 13th forward for the NHL group, which highly deserved, I think is something not to be shirked away from. This is a guy who Bednar mentions by name when asked about the standouts from the Magnus Arena game. He has kind of earned that situation for himself, considers it a high honor. I was able to chat with him after practice on Wednesday, and he talked a lot about the trust that, you know, and how much of an honor that is to be that highly revered and to get to play next to some of these guys in a situation like that with recognition like that. I think that's super important. Like Gavin's been saying the last few episodes, though, while I think this is a huge honor, I don't see this as a situation where he sticks there starting on the starting roster for opening night. I don't see him unless, you know, the worst of the worst happens. And unfortunately, the Avalanche run into something like a Barkov situation or a Jamie Benn situation, which thoughts to Jamie Benn, collapsed lung is no joke. That was a little devastating to hear.
Somebody say he got the wind knocked out of him.
Grant, too soon.
Too soon.
No, yeah, oh my gosh. Someone like
I'm just saying, at least he wasn't in Colorado. Could you imagine having a collapsed lung here? That'd be, ouch.
Yeah, the.
Sorry.
Yeah, Kevin. No, I mean, I think it's also significant. You saw Barkov in that unit, too. They definitely have a lot of faith in him, like I was mentioning earlier. And the fact that those are like the two, I guess what he would call not established NHLers mm-hmm. in the group that were invited in. I think that that's really telling. Barkov is definitely a mainstay. They're going to give him like at least a month until Logan O'Connor comes back. Then they'll really assess who they want to cut. But yeah, with Brindley, I think it's just a good ego boost to him. It's a good show of confidence. I do expect to see him in some games this year.
Mm-hmm. Injury curse is inevitable.
Oh, yeah. Fun fact, Gavin Brindley does not have his first NHL goal, so that's still possible.
Yep.
Yeah, I think you can expect to see him on the ice at Ball Arena, but I wouldn't think that – ideally, you're thinking, like, best-case scenario, end of this season, he's ready to go. More likely, you're looking at next season and saying, like, probably. All right, third line wing spot, we need somebody. What's Brindley up to?
I want to pose this to you guys, and I didn't have this on the show notes when talking about this, but you bring up a good point in talking about cuts with Logan O'Connor returning early to mid-November is the timeline that Bednar gave us on Media Day. But with Logan O'Connor coming back, assuming that Drury and Barkov are occupying those bottom six C spots, who gets the cut?
I think if you're the Avalanche and this goes in your dream scenario for what we have, I think it, as far as bottom six goes for this season, right? If everything goes well, I'm talking Jack Drury becomes third line center. Victor Olofsson is a great winger. Kivi Ranta has a good season. Parker Kelly's serviceable because you got him locked up until 2030. You've got Barkov and Brindley really fighting for that last spot. I'm not going to lie to you. I would say I would try to get all the value you can out of Kivi Ranta because as much as I like him, I like the idea of us bringing in like a new hook, like what new hook was when the Avalanche were going on their cup run. I like that a lot better. It also saves you a lot more cap. You can use that maybe if you really want to give Natchez a lot of money. You can maybe put that extra. I know it's only 1.25, but with the cap going up, everybody wants more money. You can maybe put a little more of that into Jack Drury, keep him maybe at a better contract standpoint. Let's see here for Barkov. So Brindley's an RFA after the season, and so is Barkov. So, mm-hmm. you know, you can kind of assess what you want there, and they're not going to be as expensive.
Dre. Yeah. He's an RFA, yeah.
And, you know, mm-hmm. they're not going to be as expensive as Joel Kivi Ranta because Kivi Ranta will be 30 by the end of this season. And, you know, he's going to probably, especially with the cap going up and a lot of these third and fourth liners finally being able to make, you know, decent money. Not saying that $1.25 million is anything to sniff at because that's a lot more than, you know, some of us make. But, you know, I personally would go with Kivi Ranta. If Olofsson pans out, I 100% keep a player like that. I know Barkov and Brindley can develop, but that dude, if he can put the puck in the net, I would love that guy to stay on the Avalanche for a while.
I think it's generous to keep Brindley in that conversation of vying for the extra spot.
Yeah. I think
I will say If it comes down to anybody, I think Barty's the biggest conversation in there. But even then, there's a conversation to be had about, you know, if he pans out at center, you're not going to send him back down in favor of moving a Ross Colton or a Parker Kelly to center, if they're, especially if they're playing well in their respective positions, which yeah. Bednar seems to enjoy.
Yeah, but I did say in the absolute best case scenario.
Right.
Okay.
I think when you're looking at everybody in terms of like who gets cut when people come back, it's gonna play out during the season. I think you'll see a lot of the confidence with the organization during the season. I think if Jack Drury really starts playing well as a 3C, you're gonna see his contract get signed. You're going to see, because he's an RFA, you're going to see that like 3 for 3, 3 for 3.5 or whatever, just go through. If he doesn't, he's just going to get re-signed as a 4C or just traded, because they might say like, nope, Barty's our 4C. We don't need an extra expensive 4C. That could happen as well. I like Jack Drury, so I hope that doesn't happen. But
I think he's too valuable in face-off numbers alone for the Avalanche to just chance passing up on that
face-off skill into Barty's and then ship him off. but I think when you kind of like break it down, like Parker Kelly, great at wing, like really showed like that he's got a lot of potential at wing. Ross Colton is so good at wing that you know he was a good center, but it's still, you want him on the wings. You're just kind of looking at that spot where Kivi Ranta and Olofsson are, and you kind of come up with your situations. Like, if Olofsson can really at least be defensively responsible and offensively consistent with the other guys, like Colton, he already seems to have a lot of chemistry with, then it's a pretty hard ass to move Olofsson off. It's the same with Kivi Ranta. He's a very good defensively responsible wing. He's like one of the best defensive wings in the league and a great penalty killer. So it's it'll be between those two. And I think if Olofsson's playing well, I think it's got to be Kivi Ranta, who is your 13th forward, which is a great world to live in.
Look, yeah. I also will say though, I do think someone who might be on the block here, if he gets like, because we all remember he had an amazing start to last season. But oh my God, the fall off was worse than like anything you've ever seen in hockey. I understand he went from playing first line minutes with, you know, Mac and Mikko to essentially playing third line minutes where your center was a toss up every night and your wingers were a toss up every night. Like, you just didn't know who you were playing with and you can't develop any chemistry. You also had Casey Mittelstadt, who was doing terrible as well. But I mean, Ross Colton at $4 million. I love him. He's a grinder. He's a dude who gets underneath people's skin. But $4 million for your third line winger is a really tough pill to swallow, especially if, like, you know, because personally, I think Victor Olofsson's a great pickup. That might be the guy you want to go with. He does, you know, he's a little bit bigger. He's got a little bit more of a scoring prowess. And, you know, as much as Joakim Ranta, like you said, very defensive, you know, defensively minded, which I love. But, like, we've got other guys who can go on the penalty kill. I mean, we've got Parker Kelly who signed up long term. You have Logan O'Connor who signed up long term. Assuming you sign Jack Drury, he's going on the penalty kill long term. You know, and you can kind of teach that to newer guys, because all it is, you know, proving your worth to the team essentially for, as at least being a forward on the penalty kill.
Scratching so, Ross Colton, that's a hot take if I ever heard.
I said trading, because he's 4 million. That's a lot for a third line wing. That's a lot. That's
true, but also he might be your most versatile
that's third true. Liner that's very true.
Or bottom sixer, because he also is like first man up when you need a call up, like he's the first guy there. So it's also, you obviously have Olofsson, which I think gives you a lot of flexibility with that, depending on how you want to move up the lineup. Like, you can kind of take two losses and then still be all right with those two, but anything more than that is you're really going to start suffering. But I think Colton, like, he just does everything really well. Nothing incredibly well. If he did, he'd be a top sixer. But $4 million definitely is a larger price. I think he was being asked to be a center, and they did envision him to move up the lineup. he was just so good at wing that they want to keep him there. But I think with the rising cap, that $4 million really doesn't hurt that much. Mm-hmm. It's just when you start saying that over and over again, like, oh, well, rising cap, so this contract doesn't hurt, and this one, and this one. It's like, all right, now we're out of money.
It's the same conversation we had with Yoel Kiviranta when that was signed.
I totally agree, but my point is, though,
he's being paid exactly what he deserves.
I agree.
Yeah. I might be being a little harsh on him too. I mean, he only got in 61 games with 29 points. That's almost a half a point pace for a season. And he did play in the one playoff game that we won that game pretty well. But man, I mean, him with injuries is a really bad thing.
Out of character injury problems for Ross Colton. That was pretty rare for him. That was a very weird year.
That was too, because I'm looking through it, right? And he's played, I mean, he had 81 game season, 79 game season, 30 game season. That was his entry level deal. It is tough seeing that, yeah. You know, that, what is that, 21 games missed, and then he missed 6 games of the playoffs when, like, yeah. Really, you know, when you're a good team, Steve Kerr said this in The Last Dance, when you're a good team, one loss feels like 5. And, you know, especially with Ross Colton being that third line wing, and kind of because Miles Wood never really fit there. No one ever really fit there other than Ross Colton. I mean, that was such a big blow. And so, like, I want him to stay. But, man, if he has, like, another bad season if he has just another season where he's just not – I mean, 21 games is a lot. That's a lot of time missed, especially when you're, you know, you're really a depth guy. You're not even a top guy.
Especially when you consider he's not the only one who missed significant time last year, too.
That's true.
I do think his 40-point season is something to remember, too, as, like, his potential, because he did that with Logan O'Connor and Miles Wood as his wings.
Yeah.
And he was forced to play center, which really wasn't his natural position, and still did it very well. His analytics were incredibly sparkling. And it just turns into, like, what can this guy do when he can – make good passes. He's got a good shot, but can't really carry the puck through the zone. Is not a zone entry guy. Is not good at distribution. And then you get a guy like Jack Drury who excels in those things, but isn't the best shooter. And then you get a guy.
It's a match made in heaven.
Right. Match made in heaven. And then add in the fact that there's a dude like Victor Olofsson just sitting right there, too, who has multiple 20 goal seasons in his career. Mm hmm.
I think that
third line is something to watch. I think that's what I'm going to be looking at most. Top six, boring. We've all seen it. Who needs to watch the top six? I'm here for the third line only.
Who needs to watch Gabriel Landeskog's return to regular season hockey?
No.
I mean, I think the thing I will say though is that I think the two lines, if you're really going to be looking at the Avalanche this season with like a microscope or a microscopic lens, or like if you're really going to hone in on something, it's like the second and third lines just need to develop some actual chemistry, because there was none of that last season. Yeah. I mean, the third and second lines were kind of just like, I mean, like they were almost as beneficial as the fourth line. I mean, the fact that Yoel Kiviranta, I think, finished with more goals than Casey Mittelstadt is a joke.
It's hilarious.
You know, and I understand a lot of that's due to injuries. All of it's due to injuries, and a lot of it's doing with Bednar sometimes just going, I'm just going to start putting guys wherever I feel like it. Like, oh, hey, Ross Colton or Ivan, you're going up to the power play one, you know, have fun. And it's like, well, does that really accomplish anything? Like, blending the lines up does something, but like when the established lines that you're trying to get going forward haven't been able to get any kind of chemistry together, it's just... it's not great. You know, I like you, Gavin, I think the third line is the really fun one to watch. The second line is going to be interesting, whether they decide on, I want Lecky there or I want Nichushkin there, even though I think Nichushkin's a better fit on the top line because Lecky can't really keep up with those two.
I think Landeskog seems to be at least a lock for that second line going forward. Him and Nelson seem to be very well inclined to one another. Their skills seem to be fairly just, like similar, but also like different enough to where they complement each other very well.
Is this who do you want to put on that? Who do you want to put on that last? Who do you want that there last? You know,
and I think we're going to see a lot of flexibility. I think you have a lot of similar wings in the Nichushkin and Landeskog and Lehkonen, where they all do a lot of the same things. They have like they're not all the same players. They kind of operate a little.
I was going to say Lehkonen's probably the odd man out of that three.
Right, but it's. Yeah. But they all like kind of serve the same purpose, which is like the really responsible, like don't plug it and it'll work type guy on any one of those lines. The only complaint I would have is like we do get Landeskog top line, like that would be fun. It leaves Nichushkin and Lehkonen together, which has never really been that good of a combination. They're kind of redundant. They don't really pair well together. So that's
the only. The thing is, right, is I don't think they pair well together in a system like the Avalanche is where the forecheck isn't like the forecheck. We have a good forecheck. It's not elite. It's not your Florida Panthers forecheck. Hilariously, now Barkov, not hilariously, but ironically, Barkov is out right now. But why their forecheck is so amazing is because you have Barkov kind of playing, you know, being able to read situations based on your two forecheckers. So if you have Lehkonen and Nichushkin, who are, you know, really great in their own right as forecheckers, you have them pressuring, and that's how Barkov's able to pick up the puck near the blue line a lot. You know, if you were able to figure out some kind of system with that and Brock Nelson and having Lecky and Nichushkin, I think Landeskog could work on the top line. But is Landeskog ready to take top line minutes? I don't think he'll ever be there again. That's a lot to ask out of someone who's 32 and has a whole new need.
I don't know about that. I think he was doing it pretty darn well when he only had one leg.
Yeah. And then you come into a situation where it's officially reconstructed for the most part.
Yeah.
And I don't know. He looked pretty darn good on Sunday.
And it's not like he's been really been playing this whole time. It's not like he has all that wear and tear of being like a 32-year-old veteran. He's missed three seasons, so he's 32 years young. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. 32 years
young. With that, unless you guys have anything else to add, that's going to be.
I did want to say one more thing. Bailey, what was the word on Blackwood? Because I didn't want to talk about him just for a split second.
Yeah, so Bednar mentioned on Tuesday that Girard is still targeted to start the regular season. Blackwood, not so much. So Blackwood is probably more so projected to make an appearance about a week or two into the season.
Great. The one that we want to start, you know, at the beginning of the season versus the one that we don't really care about.
Which is a little confusing to me, too, considering it. Like, I've gotten an opportunity to watch some of those injury guys skate before group skates. And Girard has left the ice early multiple times and is still limping, it seems, kind of coming off the ice, which obviously the trainers know a lot more than we do. So if that's still the target based on Bednar's assessment and assessments he's got from medical staff, I'm not here to say that I know any better, but it is still concerning knowing that that is the target and we're still kind of seeing that, you know.
The only thing I want to say is, you know, Blackwood being out is probably – Blackwood being gone for the at least beginning of the season is probably going to be something that we look back on as the season goes along, and whether the Avalanche are fighting for maybe the number one seed, maybe they're fighting for home ice advantage in the first round, I think that's going to probably be the most damning thing because I love Wedgwood. I really want him to kind of get us off on the right foot, but, man, it is going to, you know – I think with the Avalanche's schedule, if I can pull that up really quick.
It's going to be a difficult schedule.
Because I think you have most of the teams you're playing out the blocks in the playoffs last season, if I'm correct.
I'm going to read you off the first 10 games. You've got the LA Kings on opening night. You've got the Utah Mammoth right after that. The Dallas Stars, the Buffalo Sabres, which are the Columbus Blue Jackets, which are
bleh.
So you've got the Boston Bruins, you've got the Mammoth again, and then you have the Hurricanes, I'm just going to go through the rest of October. Bruins again, you've got New Jersey two times on the 26th, or once on the 26th, once on the 28th. And then you finish off the month of October with Vegas.
It's kind of funny that we're kind of funny that both Boston and New Jersey are both knocked out in the first month of the season. Mm-hmm. But I mean, for Wedgwood, you're definitely playing against the Kings home opener. You're definitely going against the Stars. You're definitely going against the Bruins and the Hurricanes and the Devils and the Vegas Golden Knights. And that leaves who's going to be the backup?
It's likely going to be Trent Miner.
Going to be Trent Miner. I mean,
who is a proven goaltender in the AHL. I will give him that. He put on a stellar performance last year.
Yeah, but if I remember correctly, I also remember Trent Miner going up against the Tampa Bay Lightning and getting booted out in like the first 10 minutes of the game. So that doesn't really fill me with a lot of confidence. The
Tampa Bay Lightning.
But I mean, you know, I'm just hoping that Wedgwood can at least carry the load. If Blackwood's injury persists, because this is the Colorado Avalanche after all, if his injury persists and, you know, maybe we don't see him till November, I'm just hoping Wedgwood, you know, can kind of go, because he's not used to being that guy, the go-to guy. He's used to being the guy that they go to when they need him. November doesn't look any easier either, because, you know, you have the Sharks, which that one I don't really count, but you have Lightning, Oilers, Canucks who are trying to get back into the playoffs. You got Rangers.
We can save the schedule breakdown for another day.
Yeah, but, you know, I'm just hoping that Wedgwood can at least, you know, carry. I'm hoping he doesn't get burnt out super quickly, you know. Maybe be like an Anthony Stolarz for the Avalanche.
Yeah. And with that, we'll probably cut the episode off right here. Again, guys, thank you so much for tuning in and listening. Gavin, where can the people find you?
You can find me over at Avalanche Digest. We're a YouTube channel, and we produce a lot of short-form content that just covers a bunch of things. We got a video up talking about these preseason games and a bunch of fun stuff right now, so go check that out.
He's got a very lovely voice.
As you could tell on this podcast. Grant, where can the people find you?
You can find me on X. It's not X. It's Twitter. I'm always going to call it Twitter. At Grant_Foster_15. I'm essentially just the dollar store version of Steve Dangle, because I like to rage a lot at the Avalanche.
When he remembers to tweet.
When I remember to tweet. Well, you'll see it when I tweet. You'll see it. But, you know.
As for me, before I get into all of my stuff, thank you so much to the Hockey Podcast Network. If you are looking for a different show for the 31 other NHL teams in existence, they've got a show for you. Check out their website over at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com. Also want to throw a quick shout out to our wonderful sponsors in DraftKings. Yeah, we got a wonderful promo mentioned earlier in the show for you guys, so definitely be sure to utilize that for first-time users. Be sure to go check that out. As for me, you can find me over on Twitter at Bailey Curtis, and that's Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. Find all of my written content with the Hockey News at thehockeynews.com. With the Colorado Avalanche, go find the Colorado Avalanche page. You'll find all of my stuff there. But that's going to do it for today's episode. Again, thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will see you next time here at the Avalanche Warning. See you guys.